You're listening to Opacity, a podcast about working in design.
That was very schmoozy.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Craig, are you dogmatic about the use of a design process with your projects?
I feel like that's a slightly leading question.
This is not CART.
am I dogmatic about design process? I would say I am extremely agnostic about design process.
Ooh, very nice.
Extremely agnostic.
What does that mean?
To be radically agnostic about design process? I think that's kind of what we're going to talk about in this episode. But thanks for asking.
Boom. Nice. Okay, so there's a couple of tweets that we saw during the week. It's one from Sean Thompson, who is a product designer for Twitter. His handle is @CyanHex. And he said, I used to be hard on myself for skipping parts of the design process, but I'm now confident that there is no set of steps I absolutely have to take. Sometimes I jump right into Figma, other times I write. My state of mind, my domain knowledge, and the needs of the project guides me. What do you think about that?
I mean, I would resonate with that. I think we're sort of, there's a preaching of design process into our industry. And I don't think it's really helpful. Like, I think it's helpful to a certain extent to sort of have a minimal bar of common understanding about a general design process that is smart and good to lead to a certain result. Mm-hmm. But I don't think in reality people actually follow that. Like, I wonder, I'd love to survey the world of designers to see how many people actually follow. Like, it's not even, you can't even maybe ask that question because there is no single design process. Every individual will have a slightly different process. Mm. Every company will be different. Every project will be different. It's so contextual that it's not even, it's not definable. It's so airy and whimsical.
Whimsical.
Whimsical process.
Nice. Yeah, I think generally there's some kind of commonalities with it, different design processes, though. It's generally like, you know, start with the problem, define a problem. You know, gather information, go through some ideas, come up with solutions, test and iterate and that kind of thing and improve. That's loosely kind of, as you're saying, it's very easy to kind of like, it can come across as quite preachy as like, these are the steps that you need to follow. Everybody does this. If you don't do this step, followed by this step, followed by this step, you're not a good designer. You know, whereas I agree with you, it depends on the context, depends on the project that you're working on. And depends on the user, for example. So one of the things I liked about what Sean said there in his tweet was that it depends on his state of mind, but also on my domain knowledge. So if he's very familiar with the person or the type of person that he's designing for, great. If that's just not an assumption as well, it can be pretty easy to assume that you're the user when maybe you're not. But I think the type of user is so key when it comes to process, I think. Chances are you're going to be designing a product for people who are not like you, or people who are like you and other people who aren't like you. And there's a range of people that you need to cater for. And I think it's easy just going to go, oh, well, everyone's very tech savvy. Everyone kind of understands all the things that I understand. Things that are intuitive to me are intuitive to someone else. I'll put air quotes around that word because I think it's just an assumption that designers make. But like, so a product that's going to be, could be used by me could also be used by my dad, who's now a pensioner, and you could assume that, oh, he'll understand that, he'll get that, but he could be questioning every piece of language, every interaction with the UI. What does that mean? What does that mean? What did he mean by when they use that language? That could be very, you know, people who are a bit more tech savvy can just take for granted and skip by. So I think that's a key part of when to and when not to skip the process, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spoken like a true UXer.
Thank you. There was a reply to that tweet by Dan Petty, who's also another freelance designer, and he says, I used to feel unprofessional for not having a repeatable process or to be able to answer questions on what's your process if someone asks them. I had a small routine, I guess, go to a mag store, get inspired by our editorial, go home and just design, sometimes sketch, sometimes just play in the design tool. Now, on the surface level, when I read that tweet, I'm kind of like, well, that just sounds like you're making eye candy. You're not really thinking about the users, all that type of stuff. So he followed up with some more context around that tweet, saying that his whole career, he's been hired for quick concepts. And that's how he marketed himself. That I never enjoyed full year long designs. So I was always in and out, which is why I enjoyed it. It's not for everyone, but was for me.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I think that gets into, like you mentioned, like the aspect of knowing the user, as one thing, And then this to me speaks to the need for that individual designer to define their process based on what their specialization is and what they're really good at,
mm-hmm.
and why they love doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the case of Dan Petty, like he mentioned he had a background in ad work, right? Like marketing kind of oriented design,
mm-hmm.
Quick conceptual type work, not sort of long slog type of work that other designers would be involved in. So like, because of that context, because of the types of freelance work he does, that works. Like maybe it is sometimes more on the visual side. I don't know his full body of work, but maybe if it leans in that direction, like that makes sense. And then it wouldn't need this level of research that you were talking about necessarily, because that's his area of specialization. And I think every designer fits like within a process, maybe. You know, they have maybe an individual process that is within a greater process, maybe, if there are multiple people working on that, both other designers, but also different disciplines.
Yeah.
And that they focus on like, being really good at their aspect, their slice of the design pie.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've used that design pie analogy a few times in this podcast. Not sure.
Tasty. Make me hungry.
But I think like thinking about process in that, like you are an individual. I'm an individual. Everyone listening to this is an individual, I would assume. And everyone has their own design process. Like, sure, we learn a process. We learn this is the ideal process based on whoever's teaching us that. That's not necessarily the case, but sort of it's probably a general framework that's sort of agreed upon by other people in like its loose form, kind of the way you mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
But that everyone can infuse what value they bring to the table into that. So maybe they have like a really good business mind and you're a designer with a strong business or a strong strategy approach. And like, that's going to be like in terms of the process so that you give the most value you can to a project. Like that's where your value is. And that's how you create value for this work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe strategic and business decisions are already made and this is just a visual thing. Well, then I don't need to be involved in that project because it's not my area of expertise and my specific process doesn't help you reach kind of the goal of that project.
Maybe. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that individual side of things is an interesting component to it.
So it depends. Depends on the individual, depends on the context, depends on the project, and it depends on the customer or user.
For those of you who are new to Opacity, it depends is Tom's number one cop-out.
I don't know if I've said that much in the podcast. I do say it to you in real life, though.
I'd say it's a designer cop-out.
It's not a designer cop-out, because it does depend.
It does depend.
Yeah.
I use it a lot myself, but at the same time, it's a cop-out.
The thing about it depends is that it depends what you follow that up with. So you can just saying it depends is not an answer, but if it depends and then follow it up with some more context. So, okay, I'll give you an example. I used to work for an agency/consultancy. We used to help big companies with kind of narrowly business problems. So like a lot of the design stuff that I would see, say on Dribbble, would not be the type of stuff that we would do. You know, I'll use Dribbble as an example. So it's not always, like companies weren't coming to us for like eye candy or like advertising or marketing related stuff. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I don't mean to sound condescending about it, but stuff that's kind of like, a little bit shallow, more kind of visual stimulation, if you will, or that kind of thing. Okay. And there's a lot of skill goes into that. I'm not demeaning it, but the company that I work for, I'm working in-house with a product team at the moment, but where I used to work, we would have like, could be 6 months to 2 years worth of a project, for example, in a domain where you're not familiar with it at all. So process is really important for that kind of, for those types of projects. One particular project that I worked on was like gas detection maintenance. So I couldn't just skip the process, the part of the process where I go and talk to those users. I could spend a week or 2 weeks or whatever, you know, putting together eye candy on screen, present it to the client at the end and go, wow, that looks really good. And they go, well, the questions they'd be asking me, like, oh, and so how did they use this to do their job? And if I didn't understand how that person had a very kind of manual, paper-based process that they go through in their daily lives, understood all the pain points that they come across, like the stuff I'm just creating it's kind of beautiful crap, you know, it's like pointless aesthetics, you know, it might look delightful from the user, but like if it's not actually hitting the core points that are make the thing useful, that particular project useful for the person who's going to be using it, which is not a consumer, this was someone who was actually going to have to use this to calibrate meters with gas readings and all the type of stuff, do all the paperwork in an automated way. Like, I wouldn't have got those insights. The team, sorry, wouldn't have got those insights without shadowing those users, seeing how they do their job, and then finding those niches, find little innovative ways of making their lives a little bit easier.
So, Tom, you sound a bit dogmatic about process. Would you call yourself a dogmatist?
No, I don't think so. It depends on the project. So I would be dogmatic on a bigger, large-scale project like that. If a client came to us in my old agency and said, here's the problem that we have, here's our budget, so we just want to pay for design and we don't want to pay for research. That happens quite a lot. A lot of clients don't value research. They don't see it as something that's, they want the design part of it. But the research precedes design. Understanding the problem, they could come to you and frame a problem that isn't actually the problem at all. So if you go and speak to the users and or prospective users, you could find out, well, what you thought they wanted is not what they want at all. So we can go and build that thing for you. We can design it up. We can build it. You can take it out into the real world and then find out that's a flop. It's useless. So in that sense, it depends. But if it's a project that's like what Dan is talking about there, Dan Petty talking about things that are a little bit more surface level style, stylistic choices and that kind of stuff. If it's a design request for something that doesn't require that much research or understanding of a key demographic, well then, yeah, sure, you can make that call. An experienced designer will know when to kind of like do less of this part of the process or do none of this part of the process if they don't feel like it's pertinent to what they're trying to do. So if you're in the middle of a sprint that has 5 days worth of work to be done, you know, depending on the project, you could give a day to each part of that process, or you could kind of go, well, we don't need to spend that much time on the research side of things. Or maybe we need to spend 2 days in research and really understand it and less time on the finished piece.
So I think your description of process there, like, to me, that resonates with how it should be, maybe. Like,
yeah.
That's sort of an ideal scenario. I wonder when, like, the rubber meets the road, as they say. How that actually plays out. Like, do you find in most of your work, like really honestly speaking, that this is how you're able to approach projects?
Not always, no. Yeah. So sometimes you might need to cut out a certain part of it. It really depends. It's kind of like you got to cut your cloth depending on the amount of time that you have, the amount of budget that you have, you know, deadlines, requirements, all that type of stuff. So ideally, you want to be able to hit enough of those points within the process that are required to get the best result you can. So someone I used to work with before, I'll give him a shout out, John Wood. He had this kind of idea of the process being like an accordion where it could expand or contract to the amount of time that you had available, but always use that process. So if you've got 6 weeks to work on something, that's great. You can spread out your process. You can spend a bit more time on this part of the process or the next part. If you've only got 5 days, you just condense that accordion down and fit all those key things into those days. Now, the client might say to you, I'm not paying for research. That doesn't mean that you don't have to go and do research, because as far as I'm concerned, it's part of the design. Whether it's really light touch or whatever, it's just desk research, or if it's in the field research, depending on what you're working on. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the ideal way to do it. But if you can't, depending on what you're working on, if it's a product where a lot of the insights are already kind of, you know, a lot about the user type that you're designing for, or, you know, it's a bit more mature, the product that you're working on, as opposed to a greenfield type thing where you're getting a brief slapped on your desk from day one and you're like, I know nothing about this. Mm-hmm. Then you're obviously going to have to do more interrogation about who's this for, what's the industry like, is this a good idea, is there even product market fit for what you're mm-hmm. you're proposing. Because it's very easy to say, I want this. Can you go design and build it for me?
I wonder to what extent process is like a marketing tool. You know, I think for freelancers or consultants, you know, creating your website or your portfolio and talking about your process is like a thing that everybody does, thing that I've done myself. It's sort of like an assumed piece of a designer's presence is like, this is my process. Mm-hmm. And then there's maybe an in-house design team also has like a formal process that they publish in an article or they talk about in like potential like interviews for new team members to try to attract good designers to say, look, we have a good process. Like, you're going to become a part of this. So it's almost like I hadn't really thought about process this way, but maybe it, like, part of it is a marketing tool, and like having an, like, thinking about what is your individual process that you, that resonates with you, so that you can find a job or you can attract other people to work with you, mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, is that part of the value of process? Just saying that we approach work with intention. Mm-hmm. We don't just willy-nilly jump into stuff. I think you used willy-nilly in a past one, didn't you?
I think it's probably the only time I've ever used it for you. Okay, go on.
every episode needs to say willy-nilly at some point.
Okay.
But you know, if I was looking for a job and the design director said, this is our process, this is how we've refined it over time, this is the inspiration we took, this is why it works for us, like, that's an attractive thing mm-hmm. to hear, I would think.
Yeah.
If I were like looking at a place, like, that would be an interesting approach to say, okay, this design team has maturity.
Yeah.
Because they have a process, because they define that and they took the time, which is hard. Like, probably most teams wouldn't have that. Like, they took the time to figure that out and to sort of codify it, but also iterate on it.
Mm.
That's a cool thing, like sort of a design ops, maybe kind of a thing, which is really interesting. But it's sort of it's a tool. Like, maybe it's a tool for them doing their work, but it's also a tool for them attracting people potentially.
Yeah.
So it's like, what is reflecting on our individual processes? Like, if I'm thinking about, like, what's my minimal process that I approach design with? Like, for me, it's like, talk to people who are involved, whether that's people who are using the thing or people in internal, like, stakeholders. Talk to them, think about it, try some things, think about it, talk about it. Like, it's all, for me, talking, thinking, and trying stuff, and then, like, iterating and changing and trying to improve until you get to a point that, like, and that's not a process I would necessarily market. Like,
yeah.
It's maybe a bit, like, fluid, I feel like. But, like, for me, it's sort of, that's how I currently am, like, think about my design process, because it's kind of stop and go around. But that's kind of how I approach things right now. But that'll change. And I think thinking about our processes iteratively, that they're always changing, they're always improving, everybody we work with. So making iterative improvements on our design process, I think, is a part of being a designer. It's something that should be in our heads. Like, what is our process? How does our process look? How could it be better? Where is it failing? Like, for me, I want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Like, do you do side projects? And if you do side projects, do you follow a process? Like, when you're on your own time, your own clock,
yeah,
to what extent do you follow a process?
Okay, you said a lot of things there, so I'll answer a few more.
I'll respond to the...
I feel like a politician. So a few things that you said there around the process and how people talk about it and how they sell it. I think it is almost... the process is almost like sold to clients in like blocks of X amount of weeks, where you could almost say like each stage is a week or something like that. Right? So from a client perspective, seeing this, you could feel like, oh, they're trying to sell me 6 weeks of work here, and they've got it nicely rounded down to the different phases in their process. And like, I don't think I've ever worked on a project where you went through all the stages of a proper design process and felt like that was a waste of time. Maybe you'll manipulate the ratio of a certain thing to make it work for you, but that's if you're working on a kind of discrete project with an X amount of budget. It's not really the same when you're on a project team, because I think the planning is a little bit different. So yeah, on the point of doing personal projects and the kind of process around that, I always find that personal projects are the ones that suffer most when it comes to process. Because you're trying to fit something in the evenings or on weekends, in your spare time. I've got a family as well. So like, you're kind of at your worst. And I think there's always a kind of an urge there to try and like, just like leapfrog or just kind of skip it. I'll do the bits that I want to do. I'll cherry pick it because I've got X amount of time to do it. And you know, when you step back from it, you can do those things. And I always find that I don't do freelance gigs anymore, but I always found that when I did in my spare time, that you'd step back and you kind of go, yeah, that did not turn out as well as it should. Like, that did not turn out as well as if it was my day job, mm-hmm. and I was spending X amount of hours during the day and going through the proper process. Because I'm trying to skip things, you know, or because the client wanted to skip things, it generally suffers. You know, it's kind of like, get the insight sooner, or it'll surface later and kind of to a bigger impact on costs or something that's not useful to users. But I think when it comes to day-to-day teams, it's when it comes to planning people's time, planning multiple different people in different roles, that's when it makes more sense to have a process, because you're not just kind of like, it's not everyone starting at zero going, okay, go run off and just all do your things. Like, it needs to be a bit more planning. And I think process lends itself well to, like, a well-oiled team should have a decent process.
Yeah, I mean, I think when people have to work together and there's no process, everything deteriorates. And, like, it's the easiest way to ensure that nothing gets done in a smooth way. Everybody's stressed out. Even with process, it's stressful enough oftentimes. That without process, it's just chaos. Yeah. So, like, for sure, anytime humans need to interact, there needs to be a defined process. But I find even in the side projects, like, you know, like, this tendency to sort of, that I know I have, to, like, jump to the fun parts, skip the boring parts, which just, for me, kind of similar situation of, like, very small windows of time to actually chip away at these things and, like, no looming deadlines. Nobody, like, looking out, like, tapping on the shoulder, is that done? Like, it's just you, and you're left to your own devices. And it's funny how I find it funny looking at myself, like, how everything, I just throw all process out the window when it's on my own time, which is the worst thing to do. But then projects go on, it seems like, for eternity. And I played with this recently, because I have a project I'm working on, and I said, okay, I'm gonna put together my Trello board. I'm going to set it up with all the things I need to do. I'm going to plan it out. I'm going to do my steps. I'm going to move them across the board. It's going to be really nice and smooth. And actually, it was really helpful. Like, I took a few days and I did it, and I made progress quicker, which was great. So I think maybe part of the value of process is that, like, smooth execution, the ability to go from an idea, a prompt, to an executed design through some path. And that path is either fully or partially defined by the environment you're working in, but that it really unlocks the ability to be more efficient, because you don't have to worry every step, like, am I in the right step of the process? Oh, did I skip that step? Like all this kind of questioning that can absorb time and energy, it sort of goes away. So the processes can be a nice thing in that.
Well, they're not just nice, they're useful. Like, why are those steps there? You're not just ticking boxes. Like, so when design process is done well, it's, you garner new information or new insights from adhering to that process. So if you decide not to research, or you decide not to test and validate your ideas with someone before going live, you're leaving there's a higher risk that you'll fail when it goes live, and so people pick it up and it doesn't actually do what it's supposed to do. So I think with personal projects, it's the worst. I mean, this is a personal project for us. So I think the fact that there's two people involved, you know, when we were putting this podcast together, we created, like, Dropbox paper documents, and we'd be kind of conversing a lot and kind of putting our thoughts up there and putting, we didn't have a Trello board, but we put together things that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And we, like, you know, at the time I was still doing, we're doing some iteration and stuff on, like, the visual kind of branding of and even picking a name. But in doing so, we didn't let that stop us from getting any further. We had a checklist of things that we needed to do, like, very pragmatic, as in, like, you know, we need some theme music, we need some kind of MVP artwork that we can change later. Probably makes sense to have a name before we start recording, because we're going to be saying welcome to whatever the name of the podcast is. Having those steps and those things, like, thinking that way, not just jump into the kind of eye candy or ear candy side of things. Like, we could very easily go, oh yeah, we're going to do a podcast, let's get two mics and sit down and just start talking, you know. It might sound like that's what we do, but generally there's some kind of loose idea about what we're going
to
talk
this,
about.
This ear candy you're listening to is well planned.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting way that people are approaching process now. So, I mean, there's the process that you Google design process and you get kind of a bunch of articles of 5, 6, 7, 10, 50, whatever, things of a design process that are all there for you to look at. But then there's sort of the productization of process, and that the kind of front of mind thing for me is design sprints, as taking a defined process, a 5-day, possibly even 4-day, but generally a 5-day process to go from an idea to a prototype, and go through, including testing at the end, everything, you know, involving non-designers and, you know, cross disciplines and stakeholders and blah, 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 and going through this process. And it's very defined. Every day has specific workshops that you go through. And obviously companies will manipulate that based on their context. But I think it's a cool thing, like, to observe how, you know, we talk about process, we talk about individuals having process, talk about companies having process, and then we talk about process existing as a thing that other people adopt, not just, oh, we found a blog post that was top five or five steps to a design process, but it's actually a thing. There's a book, there's people that talk about it, and it's a thing that people have had seemingly success with implementing in their work, and, you know. So I think it's an interesting sort of development, and I think that'll continue. There'll be new processes that build on this and, you know, question that, and there's already a lot of questioning of that, of design sprints in particular. It's an interesting thing to observe, like, how process is more than just how we execute and design, but it's really how we build products, how we approach innovation, how we do a lot of things, and that can apply to, you know, a lot of different industries.
And you could be going through that. You could be taking all the boxes of that design sprint and doing everything by the book, but the problem that you could be trying to solve in that design sprint could be the wrong problem. Do you know? So it's not like, it's not a given that if you follow, you have to be.
But nothing is a given.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Like even you said before about research. I think we have part of maybe design dogma is that research enables the building of better products, which is fine. Like, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I don't think that's always the case. And I don't think just because research exists as a step in the process doesn't necessarily mean the solution is going to be the right solution. Like, right, like, research could lead to a failed product. It probably does in many, maybe in most cases, because most products would fail. Mm-hmm. Not sure most products have research, but research doesn't ensure success. It's just, I would call it another source of insight. Like we were talking about interviews in a past episode as a tool to get insight into a person that you're joining on your team, but you won't really know what that person is like until they start working on your team.
Yeah.
And that may take time. Same thing with research, is that it's an insight, it's a way to gather information to help understand the people you're designing for better, but it's also possible that the solutions you propose won't actually meet the needs, and people actually won't use the thing or buy the thing or whatever. So, like, as a part of a process...
Is there any harm in doing research? Like, I mean, if you can make assumptions and leave out research and say, oh, we're fine because we left out research.
Well, I think potentially there could be a harm if it's done badly. Like,
yeah.
Like, because, I mean, from my experience doing research is, it's not just like you do research and then you talk to X number of people and then they all tell you the same thing and then good, everything's grand and you can just go ahead. Mm-hmm. I said grand. That was an Irish thing, right?
Nice Irishism.
So it's not about, like, doing the research. It's about how did you do the research and what are you doing with the research and how are you taking the insights and actually understanding them?
Yeah.
Like, for me, that's the value of research. It's, you know, it's valuable to do it, but it can be dangerous if you're pulling threads that are actually not real. Like, they're not, like, research can be done badly, right?
But anything can be done badly.
It's true. It depends.
Good research. You could have good research and then you could implement it in a bad design.
Yeah, and you can have bad research and then you can ignore it and then have good design.
Yeah, but I think you can choose to ignore it. Do you know, like, I mean, if there's budget and time, I would always go with doing research. Even if it's a small amount of research, some kind of validation that the idea is not just a good idea to the team and the stakeholders subjectively. Like, it's easy to go, this is what our users would want, you know, that kind of thing. But you don't know. You really don't know. And it's, you know, it sounds like it's a cliche, but people say, like, you know, test early and often. And there's a reason for it. Like, you'll find out, you can test something. You don't have to test it to death, like 40 shades of a blue button or links or anything like that, like what Google have done in the past. But, like, you could literally flesh out this whole UI, whole product, and test late or do very little research and then only find out that it's actually not a compelling product at all. And all of that time has been wasted.
But at the flip side, yeah, I don't disagree with that. But, like, you could also do research and validate an idea and launch a product that is a total flop and nobody touches, nobody cares about.
You know? That's true, yeah.
Like, it's like people could say they want something. There could be signs in the market that people will want this thing and then you actually release it and it's goes nowhere. Or on the flip side, this could be something no one even considered even thinking about wanting, and it actually becomes this massive thing, you know, it's hugely successful. Or it's like this thing that serves a very small niche, and then it's like acquired by Facebook or something, and people make tens and hundreds of millions of dollars overnight, and then that's sort of considered success in this world. Whether that's success or not, I don't know. I think the point here is that if we're dogmatic about process, we're sort of sticking to this like somewhat defined framework for how we approach design. I think the sort of more agnostic approach to process is that everything can be questioned. Every step of that process can be potentially ignored, can be neglected, can be skipped over, that there's probably a cost with that. So skipping over certain steps in like the general, I'm saying general process because there's so many variations of what process is. There's no one defined thing. That skipping over things, depending on what you're working on, could come back and bite you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it also may not. And I think the agnostic idea is that, like, who's to say, like, what will actually bite you?
Well, how can you know unless you've got, like, one person who does, you've got two people, like, working in parallel. One person doesn't do any testing, the other person does do testing or some research. Like, when research is done well, it should de-risk a project, and it should also inform things in an objective way. So it should be able to turn a conversation around with a CEO who thinks this is what we should do. And you can say, actually, no, we have evidence to the contrary. Oh, really? Yeah, we have some vox pops here. We've got some clips of people, whatever. We tested stuff. We validated things. It's a real debate winner, if you will. Like, you know, because it's if it's objective. That's if it's done well.
But
you know?
And but also research can be done to like validate things that someone would want to know. There's a million ways to make research say what you want it to say. Like you could shape data to say a thing that you prefer to say, and that can be intentional or not.
If it's not too leading or something. Like my question at the start.
Yeah, like you and your leading questions.
Objection, Your Honor.
But I think one thing, you know, about research is this analysis paralysis idea, like the idea of just enough research, a book that came out. But the idea that...
Erica Hall
book that came out, just enough research. But the idea of analysis paralysis, that too much research could actually be even a negative thing, and slow people down and slow people through the design process. And that kind of time boxing, whether it's the accordion, to be able to zip up your accordion and do things in a much quicker time scale because of your timelines, or something like design sprints where it is time boxed like very strictly, based on like a week period. But I think, you know, I find this whole process thing, like, is it about the end product? Like, is it all about where it ends, what you get to in the end? And does the end result justify the means that you take to get there? So if Tom has his own process, I have my own process, Joe Schmo has his own process, Mary has her own process, and everybody designs that has the same brief, and they come to four solutions that are all maybe different, but all interesting in their own right. Which one will succeed? How do we know? Like, we don't know based on looking at their process. Like, because Tom did a research phase and Mary didn't, does that mean Mary's will ultimately fail? No, I mean, it needs to exist and be tested and exist in the world to see if people actually will want that thing. So my perspective is the end does justify the means. And if the end is a successful thing, then however the team or the individual got there is okay.
Yeah.
And like, that's what makes me agnostic about design process. Tom shrugs.
You can't, you can't tell, like, unless you test two people at the same time. But then again, you don't know, like, someone could have more information, but they're not as good a designer as the other person. It depends on lots of things. In my opinion, good research, enough good research is always optimal.
Well, good. I think that's maybe a good place to stop the old process discussion. Would love to hear everybody has thoughts. Again, to call out, we do use Anchor. That's the same Anchor that's just been acquired by Spotify. Exciting news. Good for them. It's not really good for us. I don't know if it's good for us. I guess
let's take credit for it. Yeah.
We're going to take credit. Yeah. I've had contacts at Spotify that I've been talking to
Yeah.
and convinced them to make this deal. I didn't get a cut, which kind of stinks.
It's in the post.
My cut of their $250 million or whatever they got. But yeah, but we do use Anchor, which has a feature where you can send in audio clips. So if you want to talk to us,
ask questions.
You don't already talk to us. Comments. Like, send in a comment, a voice comment. You can do that through anchor.fm/opacity, I believe is the URL. So if you want to play with that, we had one. Shout out to Marco. Thank you for the audio clip last time. Hope you're listening.
Yeah.
Cool, Tom. Where can people in the internets find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, @TomCDesign. Where can we get you, Craig?
Yeah, you find me on Instagram, Craig5446. And also, I occasionally write on Medium @Craig5446. That's all. Have a great week. Take care.
Till next time.